Let's talk about tax loss and tax gain harvesting in this, the 23rd episode of the Retirement Planning Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Retirement Planning Education Podcast, where you can learn all about IRAs and Roth IRAs, employer retirement plans, taxes, Social Security, Medicare, portfolio withdrawal strategies, annuities, estate planning, and much more. And now here's your host, Andy Panko.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to the Retirement Planning Education Podcast. Today, I'm going to be talking about tax loss harvesting and tax gain harvesting. Now, as I was thinking about sketching out the notes, the talking points of this show, I sort of thought about that episode of Seinfeld where Kramer says, "You just write it off. You know, just write it off. And Jerry looks at him and says, "You have no idea what that means, do you?" And Kramer didn't. So I sort of feel like tax loss harvesting is something that everyone sort of loose, or a lot of people sort of loosely know about. They think they understand it. But when push comes to shove, I think it's not fully understood by folks. They just kind of say it and throw the word around without fully knowing what it means. And even some advisors, I think, although hopefully they better know what it means than the average folk. I guess it's not as big of a deal, not as potentially valuable of a thing as a lot of advisors make it out to be. Like, oh, we do tax loss harvesting and it's a huge value add. And sure, there is value to be had on the fringes, as you'll see today. But anyway, it's not this revolutionary, turn your whole financial plan upside down for the better type thing. And it's not specific to retirement or retirees. I am discussing it here in the Retirement Planning Education Podcast. I mean, it can be used. So some of the good planning opportunities for this are during the retirement years, specifically the early retirement years where you haven't yet started pension or Social Security and you have a lot of control over the taxability of your income. There could be some great opportunities for tax loss and tax gain harvesting for retirees. But this isn't specific to just retirees. I mean, anyone can do it. So what it is in a nutshell, and I'll dig into it obviously, but at a super high level, it's a way to help manage and potentially reduce taxable income and therefore taxes by consciously selling out of certain positions that you may have, investment positions. And it only applies to regular, normal taxable brokerage accounts. It does not apply to selling positions in a qualified account like an IRA, Roth IRA, an employer plan like a 401k or 403b, or a health savings account, HSA, for example. It does not apply to those. It's just selling things for a gain or a loss inside a regular taxable brokerage account. So it could be a bit technical. I do have some videos I did a year or two back on my YouTube channel. There's links to those. One specifically, a short scripted one just about tax loss harvesting. Another one about tax gain harvesting. Both of those have some pretty slides and graphs and examples. And then I have, I did in my Facebook group, you know, an hour long live video about both tax loss and gain harvesting. I have the replay to that video posted. I'll link to that posted up as well. So let's start unpacking this beast here. So first, let's start by discussing at a high level how gains and losses actually work in a regular brokerage account, because that's important context to know before trying to understand what is tax loss harvesting or tax gain harvesting. So anything, any position, any investment you buy and sell it in 12 months or less from when you bought it, the gain or loss you have on it will be considered short-term. That matters for a tax perspective, and you'll see in a moment. You'll see why in a moment. Anything you hold for more than 12 months prior to selling it is a long-term gain or loss. So just quick examples. If you buy something, you pay $10 for it, you sell it for $12, you have a $2 gain. If you own that something 12 months or less, it's a short-term gain. If you owned it more than 12 months, it's a long-term gain. The reason why short-term versus long-term matters from a tax perspective is because federally, short-term gains are taxed as ordinary income on your tax return, no different than wages or interest from bank accounts or taxable IRA distributions or, you know, net rental income you have. It's all taxed as ordinary income. Any long-term capital gains, on the other hand, are taxed at favorable rates, reduced rates, specifically either 0%, 15%, or 20%, where the percentage is based on the rest or your total amount of taxable income. I'll go through a brief example of that later, but this is definitely one of the things that's better to check out in the videos, because you can see these in table and, you know, chart form. But that's why short-term versus long-term matters. Again, this is only gains or losses you have inside regular taxable accounts, you know, brokerage accounts, not IRAs, not Roth IRAs. Some more background about gains and losses. You can net them together across different positions. For example, let's say you sell in any given year, any given tax year, you sell for a $5,000 gain shares of stock ABC, and then you also sell for a $3,000 loss shares of stock XYZ. You can net those two together such that your net gain is only $2,000. Again, it was $5,000 gain on stock ABC, $3,000 realized loss on stock XYZ. On net, you have a $2,000 net gain. So that's the amount of taxable income that will hit your tax return that you got to pay tax on. And then depending whether that gain was long-term or short-term will dictate whether you pay ordinary income tax rates or the reduced long-term capital gain tax rates of 0, 15, or 20%. Also, that's an example of a net gain. You can also have a net zero. So the example would be you sold for a $5,000 gain shares of stock ABC. You also sold for a $5,000 loss shares of stock XYZ. Net those two together, $5,000 gain, $5,000 loss. You have a truly flat net zero gain or loss for the year. So from a current year tax perspective, non-issue. And just one thing to keep in mind, I sort of assume you all know this and realize I should probably just speak to it quickly. When you do sell something in a brokerage account, the dollar amount of market value, you know, the dollar amount of sale proceeds has no impact or virtually no impact on the taxability of it. It's really just the gain or loss on selling it. So quick example, you bought something 10 years ago for $500,000. You sell it today for that same $500,000. Even though you have $500,000 of cash hitting your brokerage account, there's zero tax impact from it. There's neither a gain nor a loss, right? So the trade size, the sale size doesn't matter. It's just the gain or loss that matters. Same example, you bought something 10 years ago for 500 grand. You sold it today for $500,001. You will have a $1 amount of taxable income, you know, $1 gain. Again, even though you got $501,000 of cash sale proceeds sitting in your brokerage account, only $1 of that's taxable. All right. So now moving on, my third example here. So we already went about what if you have a net gain between two positions? What if you're net flat across two positions? Or third example, what if you have a net loss? So the example would be, again, assume a $5,000 gain on selling stock ABC. And then additionally, you sold stock XYZ for a $15,000 loss. Net those two together, that's a $10,000 net loss for the year. So what do you do with that now? You have a net loss. Well, the IRS will let you take up to $3,000 of net realized losses and reduce the rest of your ordinary income by up to $3,000 of losses. So if this person had, let's just say, $100,000 of wages, let's say, and that was your only income, and now they have a net $10,000 loss from their stock sale transactions, they can use $3,000 of that losses to offset their other income. So now instead of $100,000 of taxable income from their wages, they only have $97,000 of taxable income. The remaining $7,000 of capital loss that they couldn't deduct this year will carry over to the next year, and then it can be applied towards next year's gains, if any, or you can soak up another $3,000 of that loss in that next year against other sources of income. If you are married filing separately, you can only deduct up to $1,500 of net losses against income. But for all other filing statuses, single, you know, married filing jointly, you can deduct up to $3,000 of net losses against your other sources of income. You can also mix gains and losses across other asset types. It's not just selling one stock at a gain, one stock at a loss. You can also net it across investment property. You know, you sell a rental property at a gain, for example. You can use losses realized in your stock brokerage account to help offset any realized gain you have on selling an investment property, you know, a house. Now, it doesn't have to be an investment property. It could be a crypto asset, for example. I don't know, same thing. If you have a gain in crypto assets, you can use a loss from your traditional investable brokerage account to help offset the gain in the crypto, and vice versa. A loss on crypto can offset a gain from a brokerage account. So there's all of your kind of, you know, investable assets where you have to report gains or losses can all net each other out for purposes of this gains or losses. Again, keeping in mind, some will be short term, some will be long term, depending how long you held the asset prior to selling it, where short term is 12 months or less, long term is more than 12 months. And you can also mix across different custodians and accounts. So if you have five different brokerage accounts, for whatever reason, you know, one at each of five different brokers, you can net all them across. So gains in one can offset losses in the other and vice versa. And if you're married and file a joint return, both spouses' activities in their taxable brokerage accounts and their other assets, again, like rental properties or crypto, you net them all together. Because when you're married, even though you're two people, when you file a joint return, in the eyes of the IRS, it is one single taxable unit, you and your spouse. So all taxable or tax reducing activities of both spouses are in effect netted together, combined together on that single married filing joint tax return. Alrighty, so that's the background. Let's now talk about tax loss harvesting. Fairly straightforward. It's just the concept that you basically consciously sell something in a regular taxable brokerage account at a realized loss, so that you can use that loss to offset something else that had a realized gain for the year, right? And again, it doesn't just need to be brokerage accounts. I'm just going to keep using that example to keep it easy, but it could also be rental properties, crypto, et cetera. So again, you intentionally selling something at a loss to realize a loss to offset a realized gain you have or will have on selling something else in a taxable account for the year. So you can either already have a gain for the year and then later, you know, subsequent in the year, sell something for a loss. That's tax loss harvesting. I don't know if there is a formal definition of what exactly is tax loss harvesting. The concepts all apply, and I call it all tax loss harvesting in my head. So for example, the other example would be you already have something you sold at a loss, and then later in the year, you sell something at a gain, and you can net those two together. Now, arguably, that would be called tax gain harvesting, because you're harvesting the gain to offset a loss you already have, as opposed to harvesting a loss to offset a gain you already have. But I sort of lump them together as functionally the same thing in my head, and I call them tax loss harvesting. But depending who you ask, that may not be the proper formal definition. Now, one thing to keep in mind, a phrase I like to say, is don't let the tax tail wag the dog. Generally speaking, tax considerations should rarely be your primary decision-making point for any action, you know, any financial action you take. In the case of selling stocks or bonds or mutual funds and doing tax loss harvesting, you shouldn't let the tax play, the tax drive, be the pure decision why you sell something. You should first and foremost sell the position because you simply no longer want it, either because, you know, let's say you're a stock picker and something changed within the management or the economics of the company such that you no longer think the stock or the company could realize the investment thesis that you thought may play out. So now it's time to sort of, you know, cut your losses or cut your gains, whatever it may be, and ditch it. That's the reason why you get out of a position, you know, first and foremost, because you no longer want it and no longer fits your investment allocation or investment profile or investment mandate. The tax consideration should be a secondary thing, ideally. Now, I'm sure there are people out there who make trading decisions driven by tax, which probably isn't, you know, it's a roundabout backward way to do it, but whatever, to each their own. So that's tax loss harvesting in a nutshell. Again, you have, let's just say, $10,000 of gain already realized for the year, and you don't want that $10,000 to hit your tax return because in the case of a retiree, for example, let's just assume you're of Medicare age and you need to be cognizant of your income, because the higher your income is, it may start to trigger premium surcharges on Medicare, where the surcharges are known as IRMA, I-R-M-A-A. I have videos about that. Check out my YouTube channel if you're looking for more info. Actually, I did a podcast about that too. Episode 5 was called "Will I Have to Pay Extra Medicare Premiums?" That's all about these Medicare surcharges if you're interested. But point is, If you are trying to manage your income and keep your income below a certain level, and you have $10,000 more of gains than you wanted to realize for this year, maybe you can go through the exercise of looking at the rest of your positions in your regular taxable accounts. If there's anything you really no longer want, and it happens to be at a unrealized loss, meaning it's less than where you bought it, then maybe that's the prime opportunity to do some tax loss harvesting. Dump that dog that you no longer want, realize the tax saving benefit of having that realized loss offset some or all of that $10,000 gain you have. That's sort of the textbook example of tax loss harvesting. So fairly straightforward. One thing to be aware of is something called the wash sale rule. Dun, dun, dun. Not as bad as it sounds. It happens more than you think it might. It doesn't mean you get locked up and get sent to jail. And stick with me. I'll explain what I mean here. So wash sale rule means if you have something in a regular taxable type brokerage account and you sell it at a loss, there are instances where you can't actually realize that loss in the tax year if you buy back that same security or a quote unquote substantially identical security 30 days before your sale or 30 days after your sale. Let's go over that again. I also have a video about this on my YouTube channel. I will post a link to that. This is kind of technical as well. I have a calendar and a timeline in that video to help further make sense of this. But just to recap, so you own in your brokerage account a bunch of different stocks, one of which is Microsoft, just to pick a name. And your shares of Microsoft are down $1,000 from where you bought them. And you choose to sell those shares and you want to realize that $1,000 loss. Great so far. But if you buy back those Microsoft shares within 30 days after the date of your sale, you will invoke what's called a wash sale, meaning the sale you just the sale you had when you sold these things at a $1,000 loss is washed. It's washed out by the fact that you just repurchased these same securities within 30 days after. And if you do, you may have to, I think disqualify is the right word, you won't be able to recognize that $1,000 of loss on your tax return this year. But it's not gone forever. What happens is instead of you realizing the tax benefits of that $1,000 loss this year, instead that $1,000 gets added onto the cost or basis of those new shares that you purchased. So that when you eventually sell them, they'll be at a larger loss or smaller gain at least because the implied cost or basis of them will be higher by that $1,000. Now, there's more to it than that. For example, remember I said you can't buy the same thing within 30 days before or 30 days after. So one question you may have, well, what if I buy stock today, it tanks and I sell it in 2 days at a loss, I sell all of it, is that a wash sale? Am I not going to be able to realize the losses on that sale? The answer is yes, you can still realize it. It's not a wash sale. Because if you unload the entirety of your position in your taxable account, then it's fine. It's not a wash sale. If you rebuy that position, like I said, that's if you buy that position and sell it within 30 days, not a wash sale, if you sell all of it. But if you sell it and then rebuy it within 30 days, that definitely is a wash sale. And the disqualified loss will be tacked on to the basis of the new shares you purchase. It's also hairier than that because depending how many shares you still have left versus how many shares you sold, maybe only some of your losses disqualified, meaning the rest can be realized this year in your tax return, or maybe all of it's disqualified. So it really all depends. I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole of wash sales. Maybe I guess I should probably do a separate episode on that. Note to self, sometimes probably write down. One other thing to keep in mind with this wash sale thing, if you sell something, this is getting more complicated than I want it to be. If you sell something at a loss in your brokerage account, but you didn't sell the entirety of the position, you still have some shares remaining. And you go back and you don't rebuy the same shares in your brokerage account, you instead rebuy them in your IRA, that would still invoke a wash sale. And therefore the disqualified gain would have to get tacked onto the basis of the shares that are still remaining in your brokerage account. Confused? Yeah, I am too as I'm saying this. No. So let me just leave it there about the wash sale. Just something to keep in mind. You can't go buying and selling willy-nilly inside a brokerage account, especially when there's losses involved in the sales, because you want to watch out for this wash sale rule. Again, not the end of the world if it happens. the IRS doesn't show up at your door, handcuff you, and, you know, perp walk you out. But it does complicate your tax return. It will complicate the reporting of these the basis of the remaining shares and things like that. So try to avoid it if you can, but don't let washout necessarily stop you, because it's not the end of the world. Just keep it in mind with tax loss harvesting. All right, and finally, tax gain harvesting. So this is, again, slightly different definitions of what exactly this is, depending who you ask. In my mind, tax gain harvesting, and how I use it with clients, is specifically when your income is low enough that you can benefit from the 0% long-term capital gains bracket. So let's unpack this a bit. Here we are, tax year 2022. If you are single and your total taxable income, inclusive of long-term capital gains, is $41,675 or less, any taxable gains within that any long-term capital gains within that $41,675 of taxable income will be federally taxed at 0%. Score. Just quick reminder for those, you know, basics of the tax code, this is taxable income, this $41,000 and change figure. It is net of your deductions, whether it's standard deduction or you itemized, whatever it may be. This is just taxable income. So any portion of long-term capital gains within that $41,675 is federally taxed at zero. If you have more capital gains than that, don't sweat it. It doesn't mean the portion above and beyond the $41,675 of taxable income will be taxed at the next long-term capital gains bracket, which is 15%. And then eventually the next bracket is 20%. I forget the exact figure. I think it's a few hundred thousand dollars where that one comes into play, upwards of $400,000 or $500,000, if I remember correctly. Or if you're married filing joint and your total taxable income for 2022 is $83,350 or less, inclusive of long-term capital gains, any long-term capital gains within that $83,350 will be taxed at zero federally. Now, this is federally, not state. To my knowledge, most or all states that do have income tax don't have a reduced long-term capital gains thing. Whether you sell something after a day or after 10 years, every state I've seen so far, which I can't attest this is all of them, but every state I've seen so far will tax those gains as ordinary income. They don't differentiate, you know, special capital gains tax rates versus other sources of income. So just getting back to tax gain harvesting, if I did this last year, for example, with some clients, if you know you're going to have under that amount of taxable income, again, for single folks in 2022, it's $41,675. For married folks in 2022, it's $83,350 of taxable income. If you're under that for the year and you have a brokerage account that has some positions in it that are at long-term capital gains, unrealized capital gains, so things you've held more than 12 months that are at a gain, you can selectively sell off some of those things and back into a certain amount of capital gain to fill up that 0% capital gains bracket. You know, give yourself some more taxable income to fill up that 0% capital gains bracket. And by doing so, it's a good way to tax efficiently and intentionally control the realization of those gains and the taxation of those gains. And if you like the position, remember I said before, don't let tax decisions drive when you sell something. Well, in this case, it's okay. If you like the position, you can sell it, have the gain realized for that year, have the gain be taxed at zero if you fit within these taxable income limits I mentioned. And if you like the position, simply turn around and rebuy it. You can rebuy it within seconds or minutes. Unlike with having a realized loss and having to worry about when you rebuy the position so as to not invoke a wash sale, when you sell something for a realized gain, there is no restriction or limitation around how quickly you can rebuy that position. So what I've done is, you know, last year, like I said, we did take advantage of this for some clients that had really low income for the year. We said, let's not let these low incomes go to waste. You have some position. Stock market was still chugging along. You know, S&P was still making new highs at this point at the end of 2021. You have some positions at gains, unrealized gains. Let's trim them down. Let's sell some. Let's realize these gains now while you can pay zero federal tax on it, plus, you know, whatever your state income tax is, which is typically a few percent. And then we'll rebuy it. We like these positions. We want to keep it. Just take some of the gain off the table now, right? Do it while we can control it, while you can pay zero federal tax on it. As soon as you sell it, turn around, rebuy it. That's exactly what we did. So that's tax gain harvesting. And we quote unquote reset the basis in these positions, where basis again is just the price at which you buy something. From us having sold these things, realize the gain on it at the time, and then repurchase them at a price that's higher from where we originally bought them, we reset the basis higher. So now going forward, the new gains or losses on these positions, we based on this higher new purchase price or higher basis, hence, quote unquote, resetting the basis. So that's it. That's tax gain harvesting. Again, it could mean different things to different people, as can tax loss harvesting. But the gist of what I went through today covers it. Not to say there's not other derivations of this or other ways to think about it or apply it, but these are kind of the main ones that I wanted to hit on. So let's leave it there. Hopefully you found it helpful. As always, if you like this podcast and what you hear, you'll definitely dig my other content sources, my Facebook group, Taxes and Retirement, my YouTube channel, Retirement Planning Demystified, and my monthly newsletter, Retirement Planning Insights. You can find links to all three in the notes of this episode. Also, if you do like and appreciate this podcast, please definitely give it a like, a thumbs up, a stupendously great review on whatever podcast listening platform you use to listen to it. That would be greatly, greatly appreciated, as more likes, more thumbs up, more clicks, more reviews help this podcast get better found and put in front of more people in these various podcasting platforms. So that's that. Thank you as always. I hope you enjoyed this, and I will see you next time.
The information discussed in this podcast is only general explanations and education. It is not specific tax, legal, or investment advice. Before considering acting on anything you heard here, first consult with your tax, legal, or investment advisor. Thank you.